Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We do congratulate Jason Murray. Absolutely. And we wish him all the best. He joins a long line of great sports editors at the Washington Post, including Marty Zad, George Solomon, and Don Graham was a sports editor briefly. So, you know, good for him. Good for him and best of luck. I read it every single day, and I want it to be great.
Do you have a direct line for any future complaints?
Yes, we're going to need that.
We're going to need it down the road.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
How serendipitous that Liz Clark is here, having worked with Jason Murray at the Washington Post. You love Jason Murray.
Thought the world of him.
That's
he
great.
Is that rare editor who is great at everything. You know, word editing, news judgment, compassion, smarts, just, and doesn't hold a grudge. You
That's
know?
Wonderful.
Yeah, he's just the
And he
best.
Listens to this show.
Really inspired.
And he writes
Smart
us,
choice.
I offer this with slight trepidation, his phone number.
Yeah.
His phone number and says, P.S., please tell Michael it rained on Friday. We wish Jason all the luck in the world.
Yes, thank you, Jason.
Michael is not here. Michael is with his family in Michigan for the week. We were all not here last week. I probably won't do that again. Maybe in August, maybe 1 week. But, I mean, I missed. I don't know about you. I don't know about anybody who's listening. I can't take vacation. I cannot relax.
That's
I'm not
so
that guy.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, everybody says, why don't you just get away? I can't get away from me. Like that's
that's the problem.
I can't get away from me. If I'm not doing something, if I don't have tasks, if I it just doesn't work. I played golf every single day. I played like 8 days in a row at Rehoboth. I got worse. I mean, I was okay for the first 3 days or so. I got worse, and then we were in the member guest with me and my friend Eddie from high school, and we were the oldest group there. And you know, we didn't play well. I played very poorly. But I couldn't – I'll get to the tournament in a second. I just played poorly because I played – too much golf. I mean, there are people who go on cruises. I can't go on an ocean cruise.
No,
I've thought about, have you ever gone on a cruise?
Oh, no. I would never, ever. I'm so averse to even the concept. No.
So I won't go on an ocean cruise. I'm afraid of water. I'm afraid of boats. The cruise that I've thought about taking, and I had somebody tell me about this, the river cruise in Europe, where I assume on rivers you can see land.
Oh, sure.
You know, I assume rivers aren't so wide that you can't see land. Like the Rhine River or the Danube River or things like that. There are these cruises. They're pretty high end. What am I going to do with my money except give it to the kids? So you cruise Europe, certain places in Europe, and then you can get off and play golf. Like you can do that. I don't like flying to get there, but I could get enough drugs in my system to do that. I've done that before. I'm thinking about that. Does that doesn't interest you either? You wouldn't?
Well, we have different aversions. I mean, my aversion has nothing to do with open water and not seeing land or no anxiety about that at all.
Right.
It's about being cooped up with this mass of strangers wearing name tags and staggering around drunk and, you know, stuffed with food.
Yeah.
It's just this big petri dish. I mean, I would feel so trapped. I don't do group travel as a rule. I mean, I've traveled a ton, but usually, you know, by myself calling my own shots or, you know, reporting trips.
Right.
And I feel, you know, I just cannot imagine being part of a herd crammed on a boat.
So that's my idea of those Caribbean trips that I would never, ever go on.
Yes.
But if I understand these river cruises correctly, there's a limited field. You know, there's not thousands of people.
I'm sure you're right.
And you get off every single day. You get off the boat every single day. So you can sort of go where you want to go and you might meet. I think it's possible I could meet a few people I would like. I'm sure I'd meet some people I wouldn't like. It happens in all walks of life. I'm not afraid of that. I'm afraid of the literal petri dish of COVID.
Yes.
I'm still afraid of all that. I still don't go anywhere, basically. But yeah, I've actually thought about that. That's the only kind of cruise that I would take. I can't. The reason I would take it is because my days would be filled. I can't sit and relax. You know, people like to. Bob Ryan. Bob Ryan
loves
goes
cruises.
Off in the woods in yes. Maine and
yes.
reads.
Yes.
Like, shoot me. I can't do it. You know,
you need
I have
tasks and activities.
I need people. Yes. I need noise. I need activity. Yeah.
Well, that might
I don't
work
relax.
For you. I see.
Well, do you relax well? I don't relax. Yeah. You do?
Yeah, I do. I mean, in,
did you
in
always?
Retirement, no, no. Usually I'm stressing about, you know, some mistake I've made, you know, in the paper. Or, yeah. You know, was this fair? Was this balanced? Was that the right word choice? Like the endless tape loop of recrimination. But no, I'm pretty good at relaxing now. Yeah.
So you wouldn't want to get on this particular ship?
No, no.
Oh, that image
me.
That's
no.
viral.
No, no,
of,
right. No,
this was the new largest cruise.
I don't know. I don't want to be on. No, I don't want to be on.
No,
that.
That looks.
I think you're right, though. I think the river cruises. I've known some people that have gone on that. It is a more of a limited crowd.
Yeah.
And you do get to go off the boat. I think every day.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah. I think there is that. If
the only
you know,
thing I'm afraid of is that something happens on the river and they put you on a bus. I don't want to go on a bus.
Oh, that sounds like a bad movie.
Yeah, I don't want to go.
No,
on a
No, I should say I did go on a Seine River cruise, like
on
a three-hour thing, you know, in Paris
for
a dinner.
Okay. And how was it?
It, you know, it was my dad's idea. He was 89. We knew it was my brother and I going to be his last trip to Europe. And he wanted to give us this dinner cruise. And my brother and I secretly like rolled our eyes. God, that sounds corny. But dad wants to do it, you know, and he told me to book it, you know, spare no expense. We all loved it. Yeah. I mean, it was so moving. And largely because you get this vantage point of Paris that you wouldn't get otherwise. It's so obvious, but, you know, this
it's the same
not,
in New York Harbor.
I guess you're right. It's you know, this was not long after Notre Dame had burned.
Oh, yeah.
So to float so close to it, underneath it, and look up at this charred ruin that's still intoxicatingly beautiful. I mean, it meant so much. It was an enduring memory.
So you know, I'm not shutting the door on that yet. I will.
I can
at some
see. Yeah, that's
and
a different
I'm
thing
not
than
shut the door.
I would love for some people to email us and tell them their experiences.
Who've done it?
Yes.
Let me know what it's like.
Good and bad.
Let me get to this tournament, the Rehoboth Beach member guest, which was we had such great luck. Every day they said it would rain, and it never rained the 3 days. It's a wonderful format. You are put in groups, you know, assigned by handicaps. So the level of play is relatively equal. And there are six groups. So there are six teams in a group, and you play nine hole matches against the other five. And then your aggregate points that you have won determines who wins your flight. Ben Lynn and Terry Lynn, his uncle Terry, won the flight. They've killed me before. if anybody remembers this, where I Terry Lynn, he killed me. He careered it against me in the Talon Cup, and I said, "You're like Jerry. You're like Jerry West, and he's Asian." He said, "No, I'm Jerry East," which was funny. It's very funny. He killed me again. I mean, we're played again. He hits a ball. It's going to go off the green. It's going to go way to the top, and he goes, run down now, run down now. And of course it listens and it gets to 2 feet from the cup. You know, and Ben is a good player, but Ben is all over the fairways, and then his second shots get him to the green from other fairways. You know, he's not on the fairway he's supposed to be. They're lovely people, they're, you know, and the highlight of our day for Eddie and I was ultimately in our match with them, and they did win the flight, and they were the best in the flight, that we tied them.
Wow.
You know, we tied them. I had on the two par fives that we played, I had a par and a birdie. I never do this. I didn't win either hole because Terry chipped in from off the green on the par and birdied the same hole I did and birdied it before me. And I was lucky to sink my putt. And as I said to him, I love you and hate you and want to kill you. And, you know, and he's a lovely guy. So, you know, we did that. But that I did not play well. I played well at the beginning and had a good time. My only complaint about the tournament is we all didn't tee off from the same sets of tees. Some people younger than I teed off from a forward tee. Now on some holes it doesn't really matter. On the par threes it doesn't really matter, but on a couple of holes, if you're on the greens and I'm on the whites, I'm giving you 100 yards. I'm giving you 100 yards. And if you hit a drive better than I do, like I can't hit it more than 180 anymore. If you hit it, can still hit it 200, your second shot in is just so much different and easier than mine.
Yeah, you're right there.
And I didn't, I mean, I found out really late in the game that I could play from the greens. I'd have to give up strokes and all of that. There'd be a mathematical component to it. And now I realize that we should have, like Eddie and I qualified. We were the oldest guys in the group. And we played from the regular tees that most of the people in the group. And one time we played two guys, nice fellas, David and Michael. And they played from the greens. And we got shots on some holes, and it didn't matter because they were close enough that their shots were easier and more routine. And so we got drilled by it. We lost the first four holes. We were done. We were completely done. And I think we were sort of psyched out because they're teeing off in front of us. Again, nice people. Just part of me, I don't know how it works, but part of me feels that you should play the same course as the people in your group.
Yeah.
You know, you should play the exact same course as people in your group. But next time, if it's available to me, so I give up strokes, so what? You know, oh, at our age, we're not allowed to say strokes. We say shots. They say, we'll just say we give up shots. That's funny, isn't it?
That is funny.
Yeah, it's funny. So, and I've talked about Jay Whitby before, who's a great, great golfer at Rehoboth Beach. He's won the Delaware Open. Like, he's won against all comers in the state. He shot a 29 on 1-9. He was 7 under.
Wow!
Like he didn't play the next nine, because that was the last nine. But he's walking into the next nine with 29. So if he even shoots, like if he has a pretty good day and shoots 2 under, yeah, he's 9 under. He's shooting 63. I mean, I don't even know what the course record is, but if you shoot 29. You know, so all props to Jay Whitby, who's a wonderful guy and listens to the show. I've played with him in a couple of tournaments where he got stuck with me and he won, you know, and we got shop credit because of him, not because of me. So it was a lovely, you know, it was a lovely event, really. It's a lovely event. I just, you know, and one other thing happened that was great. And I, you know, I am very nervous about dinners, and I did go to the dinner afterwards and sat at a table with a bunch of other people, and God knows if by Wednesday I'll have COVID, you know, I don't know. But I went out to dinner. Eddie and I went out to dinner one night, and I called, and you'll know this name if you're from the Washington, D.C. area, Todd Gray. He owns a great restaurant called Equinox I've eaten at a number of times. You've eaten there, right? It's great.
Yeah, not many times.
Okay,
but yeah,
so Todd now has a place on Rehoboth Avenue. It's the size of one bowling lane. I mean, it's just all the tables are on one side, and the only way you can walk is on the other side.
Oh, nice.
And it's called the Federal. It's great. Okay, and it does big time business. And I called him and I said, you know, maybe we could take out. And he said, well, I could put you in the outdoor tables. Well, I didn't even know they had outdoor tables. They had a couple of outdoor tables right as you walk in. So as I'm sitting there, to my right is all the foot traffic on Rehoboth Avenue. It's 10,000 people walking by as I eat. But that's okay. You know, I was out. I felt good outside. And Todd has this thing that he does. He goes, can I cook for you? I go, sure. Yeah. And what that means, now he's cooking for everybody, but what that means is you sit. And he comes over with all the different courses.
You make no decisions. That's so nice.
We had a gazpacho soup with crab meat. We had a corn and scallop salad. We had a pasta dish. And then we had swordfish. And it was among the greatest dinners I've ever had in my life, as it is when Todd Gray cooks for you.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I just thought, this is great. I mean, this is really wonderful. One of the times I went to Equinox, and Todd remembered this. It was out of the blue. Steve Nash was still playing in the league. He was playing for Phoenix. And I was there with somebody else. And Steve Nash was in the restaurant eating by himself. And he came over and he sat. And so, because he recognized me from PTI. And it was like thrilling for me because he's, you know, wonderful. And it was great to talk with him for about an hour. And Todd remembered it, he said, because Steve posted pictures of himself there.
Oh.
So they got a big walk-in crowd as a result of that. So if any chef ever says, can I cook for you, just do it.
Man ever says that. Right.
All right. So we will take a break. When we return, Wilbon will join us. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes from our friend Michael Granberry, who writes, on the night of May 1st when Gordon Lightfoot passed away, I felt compelled to go to YouTube to re-listen to some of my favorite songs of his. In the wake of his passing, Bob Dylan, who may have been his biggest fan, said Lightfoot died, quote, without ever having made a bad song. And every time he listened to a Lightfoot song, he wished it would last forever. So I was pleasantly surprised to discover a brilliant cover of Lightfoot's ballad, Song for a Winter Night, sung by Erin Propp, who shares in common with Lightfoot her Canadian heritage. She's from Winnipeg, which is truly the Midwest of Canada, where she and her musical collaborator Larry Roy have produced two albums. This is called, Song for a Winter's Night, right?
No, this is
Frost. Oh, this is The Frost?
The Frost,
this
yes.
This is The Frost. And it's so odd because Erin gave permission and sent a cover letter to Michael Granberry, which she said of her collaborator, Larry Roy. He wanted me to tell you he's a big fan of Tony Kornheiser, and pardon the interruption. So that's wonderful. This is called The Frost. We will play two songs by Erin Propp and Larry Roy. This one plays in Michael Wilbon, who has three things he wants to talk about. And let's start with Steph Curry. I didn't see the hole in one. I saw the eagle, and I saw him pick up his child after making the eagle. And I did read, Mike, that there was some controversy because when Marty Fish was teeing off, somebody sort of deliberately shouted and got him off his game. Did you read about that?
No, I haven't read about any of it. I just haven't watched. I was watching live.
Oh, okay.
By the time they hit their second shots.
Right.
And, of course, Steph Curry hits his to whatever it is. What do you think that putt was, 20 feet?
Yeah.
So, Fish, I saw each one of their approach shots. I didn't have the sound even turned up until they got to the green.
Right.
And then, because I didn't watch it.
I didn't watch it either. I mean, I
played in it once.
Yeah, I watched it when you played in it.
Or something.
Yeah, I didn't.
You know, and just sometimes I watch it. It's fascinating. It's fun to watch when it's just like one of the most scenic golf courses anywhere in the United States. So when Curry makes the putt from 20 feet for eagle, and you know, they're saying, you know, he's had an ace. This would be his third eagle of the weekend. And like, he's not going to make, he's not going to make this. Come on now. And he drops it, boom, and he sprinted off. It was great. It was just a great moment. And, you know, Curry was, it was great talking about it afterward. It's very cool. I'm going to see him later today, and I can't wait to hear about it and talk to him about it.
So I thought about Curry. I tried to think about who are the most popular athletes. Hmm. Who are the athletes that people like the most? And I came up with a short list of three.
Okay.
Right now, to me, these are the most popular athletes. Steph Curry is on my list. Shohei Ohtani is on my list. Hmm. And Patrick Mahomes that's my list.
Mm.
Those are, do you think anyone is more popular right now than them?
Well, if you expand it to include just places other than the United States, you got Lionel Messi, obviously.
Oh, no, sure. But I mean, I'm just talking about, United States pro athletes. That's all I'm talking about.
I don't think there's anybody that you've left out.
Yeah, I think that's it.
I think that any... Well, LeBron...
No, because he's been controversial and he's walked out on teams. No, I don't think he's as popular as Steph Curry. I don't. I mean, I thought about him. I didn't, you know...
You know, we might be splitting hairs.
I thought about Brady, but Brady's not playing anymore. He's not playing.
Well, beloved... you know, might change that. Popular, you can look at that as two ways. I don't know if Steph Curry's, say, a way you could determine that in part is by, say, jersey sales. If people are willing to go out and spend their money on a guy's jersey. So I don't know who has more jersey sales now, greater jersey sales, LeBron or Steph. But, look, Steph Curry is on anybody's list, and that would be worldwide
and
at
he's,
that.
He's likable. People like him.
Yes.
And that's important. They like him.
Yes.
All right,
More reason that's why, and he won this thing. He won the tournament with that putt.
Won it. I mean, so good for him. And a hole in one is a hole in one. I know I've never had one, so good for him. And I know, so I should tell people out there that when I told Mike that I was out in Rehoboth, and he said, "When are you coming back?" And I said, "I'm going to drive back Sunday morning." And he said, "Well, you can't drive back Sunday morning." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, because the Wimbledon final is Sunday morning. You can't drive back then. You're going to miss the final." Well, I didn't miss the final. I got back. I didn't miss the final. But you, I'm sure, watched every ball.
Every swing.
All right. Liz is here. I'm going to talk to Liz later about her thoughts. But you tell me.
I looked at the paper yesterday, and I said to Cheryl, this is like one of the few times, I'm not going to say the only, but I said to look on the Washington Post page and to see a story from Wimbledon, and it's not from Liz Clark. authored by Liz Clark. I said, this has got to be like the second or third time in 25 years. Liz, am I close?
You somewhat embellish. but it's been a minute. It's been a while.
Yeah. Wow. I just was like seeing anybody else's byline. So Liz, it's great to hear your voice. I flew back on Saturday night from Chicago, which I probably would not have done because I wanted to wake up and see this, because I wanted to see this specifically. If it had been two other people, I would have done it. Yeah. But I wanted to see Alcaraz, who obviously has every reason to be fascinated with him at 20 years old, and particularly coming off the French Open, where he played Joker and, you know, couldn't get it done, had physical ailment and blah, 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 blah. So that was just, you know, that was pretty... It's pretty incredible to just watch it, and you can anticipate something special happening. I know on Friday, Tony, Frank Isola and I talked about, because Kelleher set it up this way, whether it was good for tennis to have, you know, old guard versus new guard, a potential passing of the torch situation, blah, 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 blah. And we both said, yes, it's not just good, it's great to have that. And I think it happens much more in women's tennis than it does. I mean, I think about all the tennis in my life that I've watched, even when I was a teenager, or maybe not a teenager, but early 20s or something, watching, say, Tracy Austin and Chris Everett, and watching, didn't Zita Garrison, like, sob when she beat Chris Everett once late in Chris's career and early in hers? Maybe that was Martina. But you see it more often in women's tennis than you see in men's tennis. Wow. I mean, wow, it lived up to it. Because I didn't think that Joker could lose to Alcaraz. I didn't think Alcaraz could beat Joker yesterday. It was coming, but I didn't think it was going to happen. And after he loses, he waxes the kid 6-1 in the first set. You just like, no, not today. It'll happen, but not today. And maybe that's part of the reason it happened. Maybe the kid, I didn't hear much post-game. Maybe the kid was embarrassed because he lost 6-1 and just really fueled him. But it was just, that's one of the great slam finals I've ever seen. They were 2 points apart for the whole match. Like 146, 144, or 144, 142, something like that. And it was like, you know, the proverbial heavyweight fight. And finally, just the physically superior person at this point of his life won. Because look, I know you don't like him. I was cheering for Alcaraz. But Joker's the GOAT right now. He is. Because he owns the head-to-head. I don't care about style. I don't. Other people may. He owns the head-to-head with both Federer and Nadal. And to me, all three of them have passed the likes of Agassi, know, I know Labor's your guy.
Labor's my guy.
And I hear you, because I was a kid and watched all of the Labor stuff. I grew up on that. But Joker's the GOAT. By the way we define these things in today's culture, Joker's the GOAT.
Yeah, that's the problem. We define things in today's culture.
Maybe so.
That's the problem.
You know, and here's the other thing. Joker's still at a level.
Yeah.
He's still playing at a level.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I fully expect him to win the U.S. Open.
And if he does, he's just going to pad his lead.
Yeah. All right, let's move on.
Over those two. So.
Yeah, it was indeed a great match. I want to give you a few minutes to talk about Northwestern.
Oh, I could do without this last topic.
Yeah, I know, but you have to.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
But you have to. This is your school. This is your conference. This is your guy. You love Pat Fitzgerald.
It's my school and my guy.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're in the middle of, you know, when I heard about this a little over a week ago Friday, I was in a car, you know, driving Matthew around to his AAU basketball game, Cheryl and I. And I get a phone call saying, you know, you got to be ready for something. There's a report that's coming out, and it's bad, and you got to get ready. And I have to get ready, not just emotionally. I'm a trustee of the university, and it's going to fall on the trustees to act upon this report of hazing with sexualized stuff. And, you know, I hear it, and over and over, and I immediately am in phone calls with the athletic director, with the president, with the chairman of the board of trustees, who I know quite well. And you just realize in very short time that this is going to be, as I said to them, and I know people didn't realize it, I said, this is not a tornado, which is bad enough. Tornadoes kill people. I said, this is a tidal wave. This is a tidal wave. And this is going to reverberate for a period of time in which I know some people at the university weren't prepared for. You know, people in academia, they're not in the sports world. Some are forced into it, but they're not in the sports world. It was going to be different, and it was going to be the most difficult thing I thought our university had ever had to handle. And I now say a week and 2 days later, yeah, it's that bad. And, of course, we ultimately, after some clumsy handling of the affair, clumsy is the best word I can use probably, we fired Pat Fitzgerald, who is the most accomplished athlete in the history of Northwestern University, which is like, I don't know, 1869 or something, or 1857 or whatever it is we are. He's the most accomplished person. And at a place where, you know, sports has started to matter more in the last 30 years than it ever mattered. That's a huge thing. And we had to fire him. And I know that you and I went back on text. You were one of the first people. I said to you, Tony, I texted you the report and said, what do you think of this? And this went on. This went on. It's going to go on. We had to fire him. And in the wake of that, even the baseball coach has done other things. They were not that, but stupid, reprehensible things. And he was fired, like, the next day. So we fired Pat Fitzgerald last Monday night. And I was in Scottsdale. I was headed to either Phoenix or to Vegas or L.A., Vegas for Summer League. I thought I'd go off there for a couple of days. And, you know, after some deliberation, I was like, nope. I'm going to swing by our campus. It's the middle of the summer. Nobody's there. Not many people are there. Even the people I'm talking about weren't there. And I decided to go for 2 days at least and just be on campus to talk to people in person, including the president of the university, who to me did something that was very difficult but laudable. After making the mistake of just suspending him for 2 days and then firing him, he fired him. And he didn't dig his heels in like so many people would do in these positions. He did a tough thing and said, I did this, I made the mistake,
yeah,
and now I'm going to get this right. And he fired him. And nobody takes any glee in this. Not only is Pat Fitzgerald the most accomplished athlete in the history of Northwestern, he's loved. Okay? He is charismatic. He is wildly successful in a place that has never had it. Not in football or men's basketball, as you know, as you both know. But we love him. I have, and can't run from that. And that's part of the big issue. He's an alum. He's part of the most successful stint of playing and coaching football there. And so now we're in sort of wandering in the darkness here as we try to find our way and dig out of this. And a tsunami is what it was. The tidal wave of tsunami, it was that. It is that. So I went for 2 days. I met the new interim coach, Coach Braun, and who was not there. He just got hired in December. He was not there for any of the hazing that is described and talked about, alleged, corroborated. And I met him, and he and our athletic director, David Gregg, asked me to speak to the team, which I really wasn't prepared to do, but did. I guess it was Thursday night. And so on we go. And that's too long to go on about this, but it's really difficult. It's the most difficult thing that I have certainly dealt with in a, you know, sort of alum way. And I spoke to the kids, the whole team. And they asked me to, and I actually didn't want to do it, but I think I was glad I did. And they've made contact, some of them, with me to say, hey, can we talk to you? Yeah, I wasn't there as an ESPN person. I was there as an alum and a trustee who loves the place.
Hopefully it'll get better.
At some point.
What?
And what about the role of the Medill journalism student?
Yeah, you know, I met with Liz. I'm glad you asked. I met with the four students who did the reporting and the writing, and they... I had told them, I called them Wednesday or so after the stories they had broken, after the whistleblower they had found or came to them. And I said to them on the phone, I don't know you guys. I don't even know if you know me. You may think of me, since you're only 20 years old, as somebody who just does television. But you've done, from what I can tell, incredible work to be lauded. As an alum of specifically Medill, and as a person who wrote for 2.5 years for the Daily Northwestern, which is where their work appeared. And their work is what turned people around and really charted the course for what we know now publicly, which we did not know necessarily, if, you know, people don't read reports unless they are in the university setting. So I met the four kids and just said, hey, that's incredible what you've done. And I know you're catching it. I know you're catching hell for this, and this is what we do. If you want to come into this profession and you want to be journalists, I'm not one anymore. But you are student journalists at this time, and I identify with you, and I salute you. And Christine Brennan had talked to them already. And Christine was sort of knew more about this as it was coming down the pike. I was not paying any attention to this report, even though I knew the investigation. There was an investigation. So, yeah, so the kids, it's tough. Because they are also, in addition to just being student journalists, they're students.
It's their school.
Yes.
It's their school.
It's their school.
It's their school.
They did.
It is mine.
They did a great job, and they probably hate themselves.
No, you know, it may be tough. I talked to them, and there's one of the four I've talked to more often, because this young man has called me and said, listen, Mr. Wilbon, can I get some advice? Yes, you can. What do you need to talk about? And by the way, the football players, let me say that a few of them said to me, hey, listen, you know my dad, or you grew up with so-and-so, or you've talked to me when I was being recruited, and they're Medill kids on the football team. And whether they're Medill or not, they have said, you know, will you talk to us again? Can we reach you? Yes, you can.
That's your job.
Here's my phone number.
You went to the school.
Want.
Absolutely. All right.
Anytime you want, and was proud of those kids, because they've been through hell.
Yeah.
Maybe already. Maybe they were involved. Maybe they weren't. But you know, it's difficult for them. I think about them and their families first and foremost, and then the university community and school. But and so it's been, you know, about as tumultuous a week as you know. I could have allowed something in the family of three that I am, you know, with here. So I'm back at home, but back and forth to Evanston I will go to try and dig out.
I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. Hard thing. It's a hard thing. I mean, those kids, they had the story, and they pursued the story, I believe, fairly. And I also believe that... that they in their hearts will think, what did I do to my school? It's a school they wanted to go to, and it is chaotic at the moment. I think there's mixed emotions. They did a wonderful job.
They did.
Did a wonderful job. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Liz. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Aaron Prop and Larry Roy. This is called He Cries the Breathing. This was sent to us originally by our friend Michael Granberry, who sends us the most wonderful music. And you shouldn't even listen to me. Just go to the end of the show and listen to Aaron Prop and Larry Roy. Just absolutely wonderful. It's time to talk to Liz directly. We want to talk to Liz about the tennis. Wilbon and I have the same sort of feeling that I got home. It was the third set. I got home. It was in the middle of that game. It was in the middle of that
That's
game.
That's amazing timing.
That game that went on for 21 minutes.
Yes.
The whole thing went on 4:52.
Yeah.
And there was... Now, once Alcaraz won that game, Djokovic withdrew from that set. Uh-huh. And he said, you know, let's get rid of this set, because that was a break point there late in it. I think it made it 4-2 or 4-1, whatever it did. I think 4-1 maybe, because it ended 6-1. And Djokovic didn't put up any sort of a fight because he had to regather. I guess I agree with McEnroe that it's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. What did you think?
I think it was a phenomenal tennis match, and it was laden with historical significance for the future. It was one of those great athletic contests that was won, you know, rather than a result of the opponent stumbling, being, you know, like the women's final was, you know, less than performing to their ability. It was grabbed, it was won. And we watched over the four sets this young man, this 20-year-old, not just retain his belief or regather his belief. I don't know that he ever lost it, even though he got just steamrolled that first set. But I watched him problem solve and create and learn the grass and learn tactics. I mean, it was like that time-lapse photography of seeing a seedling become a flower, you know. And I have total respect for his coach, Juan Carlos Ferrero, but it's not like Ferrero was giving him signals. I mean, this young man was thinking. It's like drop shot here and lob to follow and uncork a cross-court forehand, like that's a rocket. I mean, there was variety there. It wasn't, I mean, most 20-year-olds who burst into the scene, at least in the men's game, do so because of one quality that just no one can handle, you know, whether it's Boris Becker's serve. It's like, boom, boom, you know, who can hit that? Or even Roddick for his moment. But Alcaraz is so much more than one shot or one tactic. It's just was wild. So I loved it in that way. But for me personally, you know, the Federer-Nadal Wimbledon finals that stretched into darkness, you know, before they could turn on the lights. And, you know, nothing would match that. And there was just an ever so slight more artistic creativity of the shots in that era of tennis, even though it was only like 10 years ago or 10, 13 years ago. This was just brutal, brutal power. You just can't believe the game, the men's game is so much power. That said, I really believe I love the variety of Alcaraz's game at 20, you know, the change of pace that got Joker more than once he wasn't prepared for. And No one adapts and responds and compartmentalizes emotionally better than Djokovic. And it wasn't enough.
So I, like Mike, did not think that Alcaraz would win this. Mm-hmm. I, like Mike, thought he'll win eventually, mm-hmm. but he didn't win in Paris and he's not going to win this. That was mm-hmm. that was my feeling. I wondered about this with Alcaraz. Maybe it's just because he's young. He seemed to celebrate points, not decisive points, not game-winning points, like in the middle of a game to get to 30-30. And then he'd pump his fist and he'd look around and he'd, you know, put his hand to his ear, like, let me uh-huh. hear it. And I wondered if you saw that and if that is something you think is good or that's just his style, because it seemed like you're sort of wasting your energy here. What are you doing?
So I didn't see that, or, you know, that didn't come to the fore. It's so interesting to hear you describe it that way. I mean, on the macro whole, I don't think he had all wasted energy in his celebrations. I think they were, you know, all within a pretty constrained thing. It wasn't like this blood-curdling scream or even
That's right.
Nadal's pirate whoops, but, you know, of his youth that he'd leap in the air. But surely I love the moments he did celebrate. And if you're right, and I'm sure you are right because you're such a keen observer of sports, and he was celebrating winning a point that sort of got him nowhere, you know, that it was just kind of
well, there was
a
still
point.
More yeah, to yeah, go yeah, in yeah, the game.
For
but
sure. No, yeah. I get your point. I would have to say I would love that because okay. it means this is an athlete who is about process, you know, who is about, I want to meet a standard I have in my head for what I expect of myself, not just the outcome. And I don't know if I'm
That's
expressing
totally,
that,
yeah,
but
no,
I
you
love
are.
That.
That's totally fair. It's totally that. Fair. I have no idea. Djokovic, after the third set, went away for a while. I don't know if he's monitored wherever he goes to, the bathroom or some changing
oh, yeah.
room or anything
yeah,
like that.
He quite often will do that at
yeah,
a pivotal
but when
moment.
He came back and he kept Alcaraz waiting.
Yeah.
When he came back, he was great.
Oh, yeah.
And that's another point where I thought, you know what? He's going to win this match.
Yeah.
He's going to win this match. And, didn't you think he would win this match? Well, maybe you didn't.
I not as much as most people did. I mean, or not, let me put it another way. I really gave Alcaraz a shot because the cramping that he did at the
in
French
France.
Open.
Yeah, in French.
This is a guy who's learning, constantly learning from his mistakes. I'm like, that's not going to happen twice. I've never seen fear in his eyes. I've not seen intimidation in his eyes. I mean, maybe like Wilbon, I thought, yeah, he's going to overtake Djokovic on all surfaces one day. Maybe this is not quite the moment. But, even after the 6-1, 35-minute set, I didn't count him out. And that second set tie break, there was a second set tie break.
Yes. Second set.
That.
Eight,
oh, I'm sorry you missed that.
I did
but,
miss that. That was spectacular.
I mean, Joker went up 3-0 yeah. in the tiebreak.
And he never loses tiebreaks.
He
tie
never
breaks.
Loses a tiebreak.
Never.
I mean, that is no. where he excels upon excels. But, you know, to see Alcaraz win that tiebreak, it's like, whoa. And then you started to see what we haven't seen in Djokovic. I don't mean to speak for everyone. I haven't seen in Djokovic in more than a decade. Physical displays of not self-loathing, but just exasperation with himself. You know, I've never quite seen him plow so many crucial backhands into the net. And it was aggravating him. And of course it's going to aggravate him, but usually he doesn't let you see that. You yeah. know, he was kind of telegraphing something that Alcaraz did not telegraph. Like, I doubt myself.
I don't like him. He is not
Understood.
My goat. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
But I thought he actually ennobled himself in the
yes.
fourth and fifth sets and in the post game.
So oh, the
speech. I really did.
Yeah.
So
I can't
agreed.
Say that I like him, But I admire, I tip my hat to the way he played the fourth and the fifth and what he said afterwards.
Sure. Oh, I do. You speak for me.
Yeah.
Yes. It was class act. It was big hearted. It, you know, and when he came time to pivot his remarks to his appreciation for his family and his box and
start
broke
to cry.
Down.
Good for him.
It just, I did the same. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just,
yeah.
He, there are times you think he is just a machine. He's like too much in control and, you know, but he's so human. I mean, the way he wept after losing to Medvedev,
yeah,
you know, the, when
with
the,
final,
the
yeah.
Grand Slam, what do you call it? The super, the,
well, yeah, the, grand,
the real, the true the real, Grand Slam
yeah,
at
the labor
stake.
Slam, yeah.
It just, that turned me inside out. I mean, he, but his,
yes,
there was, is it magnanimity or his warmth to Alcaraz, it was lovely.
What I particularly liked was he said, look, I'm not feeling good right now. I'm crediting him,
yes.
But I'm not feeling, you know, he didn't, it wasn't phony.
No.
It didn't seem to, and I think he's a phony. And so I'm, you know, I was impressed by that. Let me just spend a minute or two. Ons Jabeur keeps losing finals to lower seeded people. She had 31 unforced errors. The other woman had 13, an unseeded. Is Ons Jabeur ever going to win one of these things?
I just have to believe, but that's largely because I so admire her.
Everyone
and I
likes
so
her.
Want her. She is so likable. It is earned. I mean, the grace and kindness and warmth with which she treats other players, with fans. I mean, and I've seen this in so many settings without cameras. I mean, there's nothing for show with her. And, you know, she's from Tunisia. She's not the product of a tennis factory. I mean, she and her mom and, you know, taught herself to play. She carries the weight of her country, of her continent. I mean, and the goodwill, like I would say every player in that locker room would tell you, if I can't win it, I want Ons to win it. I mean,
but she gets to the final.
Yeah. And I, you know, I have to believe it. She just cares so much. She just wants so much. And in this particular final, even more so than the last Wimbledon final, it was almost like gift wrap for her. You're going to be facing
yes.
an unseeded
yes.
Czech woman who didn't even play last year. It's like, who in the world? This is like yours for the taking. So I think, you know, people often say tennis is a mind game. And it's like, what could be more illustrative than Ons Jabeur struggles in the finals? And I do believe we know some great players who lost a series of Grand Slam finals before they won
yes.
their first.
Yes.
And it's not because they went off and learned a new skill. It's because you learn to handle the moment and handle the emotions. And, you know, she's not a young player, but I want to believe that's all within her grasp. I so want this for her.
She appears to be the most popular female
yes.
tennis player,
and
among
she
her
has
peers.
A lovely game. I mean, I just
yeah.
have to like
well, yeah,
editorialize.
She's gotten to three finals.
Yes, but not because you know it's a Sharapova, you know, blowing people off the court. She's not overpowering anyone. It's sort of like Justine Henin. You know, she wins with artistry and variety and changing tempos, and you know she's just a real artist on the court. And she was so boxed or bottled up, she couldn't show it. And you just felt her crying inside before she cried on the outside. What's that?
Great pleasure to have you here. Thank you very much. We will take
Thank
a break.
You.
We will have email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I love this. You're immersed in liquid.
Yes. Diving deep in the ocean.
Just, You're like, yeah, you're swimming with the dolphins. And it's fitting because it's going to be like 95 degrees all week.
Yes.
Now, it's not like Texas
we
hot.
We can't complain.
No, it's not really. Texas hot.
But it's still warm.
But it's hot. My utility bills last month, staggering. Staggering.
What do you set your thermostat at?
75. And they're still staggering.
Well, that's restrained. Yeah. I'm impressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I like to do 58.
58 is good.
Guys.
Chance of
flurries. We move it down to about 72 if it gets really, really hot. Jeremy Vint plays this on whatever instrument he plays. It doesn't matter. He plays it better than you play it.
Yes.
It's just wonderful. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad, please?
Bethesda Bagels. We love them. We got the bagel sandwiches this morning. Always excited about that. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the DC area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say this for Liz. The screen door slams, Mary's dress sways. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me and I want you only. Don't turn me home again. Aww. I just can't face myself alone again. You've seen that in person more than 100 times.
Oh, easily.
And it's done by the entire crowd. Yeah. Like, he doesn't even do
it. Yeah, after a point, yes.
He doesn't even do it.
Yes, certainly. Now, in 78,
everybody knows when to come in, and, yes. You know, when he stands there. Yeah. And he smiles. Yeah. You know, it's wonderful. Thanks to our guests today, Liz Clark, Michael Wilbon. Thanks to our sponsors today, Indochino, ZipRecruiter, and Policy Genius. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, please leave us a review. Chris Hennessy in Pittsburgh. Hello, Mr. Tony. My son and I were in Hershey this weekend for a lacrosse tournament, and the conversation around our team's tent turned to Spooky Nook. Nearly everyone had a look of bewilderment on their face, but thanks to the information for life we littles get from the show, I was fully prepared for the conversation. Furthermore, I felt a sense of pride knowing I was in the same zip code as the great Mike Wilbon for the first time since I left D.C. a decade ago. However, our hotel had zero bathrobes. From Brandon Borzelli in Lebanon, New Jersey, who is the king of Spooky Nook.
Yes.
One thing I forgot to mention about Spooky Nook and its most important factor, parking. The building is enormous, and they basically funnel the traffic through two doors. One in the front, which is where the athletes get dropped off, and the other on the opposite side of the building warehouse hotel. The parking lot facing the front door is tiny. This leads most parents to drop their kid off and then drive several minutes to the extreme opposite end of the building. You would think that since there is a back door, you'd be okay to park in the wilderness and walk into the superstructure. Not so fast. Sometimes that door is closed, which means you have to walk around the entire building. Last summer, this happened to me. It was 3,000 steps. Yes, 3,000 steps from my car to my kid's basketball court. Thankfully, the fresh smell of cow manure kept me awake in the summer hot, steamy sun. Hopefully, Wilbon got more VIP treatment than this, but the key to Spooky Nook is to arrive before 8 a.m. to get the spot in the tiny lot up front.
That sounds like a fire code violation.
From Bill Powell in Madison, yes. New Jersey, I'm a 67-year-old little born and raised on Long Island, an avid viewer of PTI, fan of the podcast. My friends know not to disturb me during PTI if only Reginald trained so easily. Occasionally, my dog raises her head when I say to the TV, "No, you shut up," when Wilbon utters his displeasure. To the topic at hand, my sister Christine is alum of Harper College, or SUNY Binghamton, class of 1970. Perhaps your paths crossed. Regardless, I propose the following. I will coordinate and fund a meeting of the two of you where you can regale each other with tales of Harper shenanigans over bowls of Tillamook coffee ice cream. Sound good? Of course, I'll be in attendance, and I can only imagine the looks from my sister saying the things you do for your family. Your venue of choice, and sleep easy. You're far more important to this world than Ari Melber. So if this is Chris Powell or Christine Powell, I'm sure our paths have crossed because we were in school at the same time, and the school only had 4,000 people.
Right.
But I am unfamiliar with that name. You know, maybe...
Yeah.
Maybe I would know her, and if you listed her friends and who she hung out with and stuff.
This wasn't
like that.
The woman who snuck in through the snack bar window,
oh,
was
no,
it?
No. That was Wendy Schlesinger.
That's right. That's
whoa,
right.
Wendy. Whoa. A goddess. Laura Dewey in Apex, North Carolina. I played in a senior pickleball tournament this week at my local community center and took second place. I won a jar of pickles and $5 shop credit. Eat it, Tony. From Barry Grace in Alabama. Not to one-up Mr. Tony, but I have my own stripper story. In 1998, I was living in Mobile, Alabama, listening in the old ESPN radio days. My then-fiancé, now the woman related to me by marriage, beat me home from work and checked my answering machine. There was a message from Tracy asking if I could come over and put on a show for her and some of her friends. She left her number, and I called her back. She seemed very excited when I told her it was Barry Grace returning her call. After she told me again why she was calling, I explained I would be happy to come over and put on a show, but I had an open-door policy. As soon as she opened the door, she had to pay me. Given the fact that I was 5'7 and 220 at the time, I thought it best if I got paid up front. She seemed confused, and I told her she had the wrong Barry Grace. She was very embarrassed and quickly ended the call. I then looked in the phone book, and yes, the phone book, and found the other Barry Grace. I called him, introduced myself, explained what happened. He then informed me, indeed, he was a male stripper. I said, really, you don't say, and gave him Tracy's number and wished him well. Several years later, I received a call from a good friend in Birmingham, Alabama. He met Barry Grace, the male stripper, while at the gym. My friend called to tell me that when he told him, yeah, I know another Barry Grace, my dancing friend said, yeah, I know, we've spoken. Jolene Wojcik sent lovely pictures of Rose Zhang signing autographs.
Yeah.
You know, loves Rose Zhang, as we all do.
We as
all
we
love
do,
Rose
yes.
Zhang. Thank you to Jolene. Headline on this, is this what this is called, the subject line?
Yeah, subject line, yes.
And it's, I really hate your podcast.
So, of course, I printed it.
Yeah, you printed it. It says, Tony, did the subject line get your attention? Just kidding. I really enjoy the banter. It reminds me of the round table and the men's grill for lunch from years ago. This is my friend Eddie Brown from Rehoboth Beach. Two topics caught my ear in the last 2 weeks. First being the Sally Jenkins article in the Washington Post about Martine and Chris Evert. Now, I'm not one who would typically read the Washington Post, but on Saturday, as I was sitting on the beach in Rehoboth, listening to the jets flying overhead since Mr. Joe was in town, I was surfing Twitter and someone had posted the article. What a great read. If not for your podcast, I probably would have gone right by it. Doesn't that entitle you to some type of royalty? Now, I'd like to hold the Pulitzer when she gets it.
I would just like to touch it. There's no question. Yeah.
Just like to touch it.
Yeah, the race is over.
The second was you discussing how hot you were playing golf for the 8th time that week in Columbia. The hottest I've ever been playing golf was with you. Must have been almost 10 years ago because I don't recall you being terrible. I believe it was almost 101 degrees with 120 degrees real feel.
Oof.
Needless to say, most idiots canceled that day. Not you and I. We did take a cart and played in 2.5 hours. No slow play with no golfers. Ha. Anyway, hope you and the crew continue to do a good job. Till the next time I see you at Rehoboth, and let's play golf soon. Your friend from the other side of the bay and the other side of the aisle, Eddie Brown. So I saw Eddie this weekend at the member guest. Eddie is a great golfer. Eddie won the club championship a number of times.
Wow.
He's won the senior club championship recently, as he's still a great player. One time, Michael and I went out there, and Michael's a good player.
Uh-huh.
And Eddie Brown wanted to play against a good player. Eddie Brown birdied the first five holes.
What?
Michael had two birdies. He was down three after five.
Wow.
Eddie Brown birdied the first five.
That's.
I was awed.
That's coming out charging,
yes. I was awed.
Wow.
From Tony Beeson, Cincinnati. Stealing second, third, and home, hits for the cycle, reaches the upper deck at Nats Park, gets a song written by Dan Byrne. What a start to a major league career for Ellie De La Cruz. Note, the last Cincinnati Red to steal second, third, and home was Greasy Neal in 1919. Did you cover that game?
Oh.
No, because I had a high school exam that day. From John Sadola, Gonzaga class in 1965, Notre Dame 69. I recently went to the new Wegmans off Wisconsin Avenue in the district. Since I've been to the Refugee Safeway a number of times, I felt compelled to write a comparison. The top 10 reasons why Safeway is better than Wegmans. One, Safeway has street-level parking just a few steps from the store. Wegmans has parking in an underground dungeon. Then 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 are left blank. Because there are no reasons.
Right. I will say this. Wegmans I've become a big patron of that Wegmans.
It's great.
The underground parking lot is very easy to deal with.
From Dennis Bounds in Redmond, Washington. Enjoyed your conversation with Dave Sims last Friday. But is the Space Needle still in Seattle? You asked that? Come on, man. Is the Washington Monument still standing? Does I-95 still run north and south? Is Abby Lowell still the smartest man in Washington? Some things never change. Don't you change, Tony. From Steve Light in Roanoke, Virginia. What does Oatsy think about oat milk?
Hates
we,
it.
We should ask him. We should reach out to Adam Oates,
and see who's
who had the only hockey nickname longer than his actual name.
Right.
He went from Oats to Oatsy.
Yes.
To Oatsy. From Ryan Gall in Denver, Colorado. I sometimes wonder if there are others like me who, fearing a fate akin to Apollonia, religiously use the remote start button while approaching their vehicle. How different it all could have been had that technology been standard on Alfa Romeos in the 1940s. From Colin Skinner in Portland, Oregon. Quote, I would not take it out on the tellers as the strippers advised. As the stripper advised. It is for exactly this type of content that I listen. Keep up the great work. If you're out on your bike tonight, as always, do wear white.
Good evening, thank you for filling these seats tonight.
Aw, I know that voice.
You came out of the woods when I thank you. ushered it in. I threw my woolen sheets down to the floor, and I welcomed the winter song. The snowshoe was buckled upon my feet. I waited the snow sea to sing, and it all came clear inside of my mind that the summer had been colder than spring. When I called you, you came. Turned after winter's burn in the checkout line.